and welcome to the Not Alone Podcast. I'm Samuel Fredrickson.
And I'm Jason Moitoso.
And we're back. Oh, baby, we're back.
I don't understand why we wrapped it all up. There's nothing more to talk about.
We killed it.
I told you it was eye damage.
And by it, we mean any chance of it being anything other than eye damage.
Correct. It's always eye damage.
So Jason thought. Of course, if you don't know what we're talking about, last episode we covered the miracle of the sun at Fatima, Portugal, where three shepherd children saw the sun dance accompanied by 70,000 people. That would have been the better lead, is to talk about the 70,000 people. I'd highly recommend, if you haven't already, going back and listening to those two episodes, because other than that, without it, it's just going to sound like nonsense. Now, don't get me wrong. This is still going to sound like nonsense.
I read through it. It does sound like nonsense.
It's still nonsense, but at least it's nonsense that
can be followed.
I'm not going
to lie. I got lost halfway through. So we'll see how we do today.
Jason told me that on two separate occasions, my notes made him fall asleep. So hopefully this doesn't happen to you. Unless that's what you use our show for, which is fine.
You must have some weird dreams.
I'm all right with it.
Okay. Well, in that case, what's left to explore?
I'm so glad you asked. I don't know. Maybe the boundary of human knowledge.
Of course.
Maybe the nether regions
of
the universe.
Line that we always seem to get real close to crossing.
That we it was just Christmas. And so maybe someone should double dog dare Jason to lick the boundary of human knowledge and see if his tongue sticks to it.
You show me where that is and I'll do it.
Yikes. In any case,
where's the boundary of human knowledge? Is it just the internet? Do I just lick my iPad?
You just lick the...
Is that what I do? Well, I don't know.
No. That's deeply unsanitary.
You don't
and
know
yet,
where my iPad's been.
Given our current occupations, well, by the time this comes out, your current occupation, as I will have no occupation...
That sounds beautiful.
I know. Simply interacting with things all day and then, I don't know, eating food is essentially for us like licking 10,000 iPads.
My immune system is rock solid.
For now. Anyway, so last time, Jason, after I gave the rousing event of all of the amazing information of all of the impossible things that happened, Jason came back and said that it was all eye damage and atmospheric conditions. That's a fine theory. There's nothing wrong with that theory.
Sam, if the sun crashed into the world, we would have some long-going effects of that.
I agree. You know who else says such a thing? Is Richard Dawkins. He's written about the event at Fatima. Me and Richard Dawkins don't agree on anything. But what we do agree on is that the sun probably did not fall out of the sky.
Perfect.
Because if it did, we'd
have for me.
All sorts of things happening alongside that, right?
It'd be much more than just a visual phenomenon.
Right. Well, and it was. But we'll talk about that in a moment. In any case, if the sun had crashed to the Earth, there'd be, well, no Earth. We wouldn't have this podcast. Everyone we would have ever loved would never have been born.
So it would have been better.
Other than, of course, Joan of Arc. She still would have been born at that point. But
wasn't she previous to this?
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Everyone we have ever loved wouldn't have been born other than Joan of Arc.
Do we love Joan of Arc?
Of course we love Joan of Arc. Are you kidding me? We're going to talk about her when we talk about witchcraft.
Perfect.
It's going to be great. That's going to be in a few months.
I do love her.
Right? But I agree that the sun did not fall from the sky.
Yes.
I do not agree that this is a naturalistic explanation and that this is something that just happened and that maybe the sun wasn't bright enough, but it was still bright enough to burn or there was UV radiation. Go back and listen to last week's episode to hear a summary of Jason's argument. It was very good, but I just don't buy it. I just don't find it particularly compelling. And I also have a deep-seated belief that there are some things that can't be naturalistically explained. So I decided to go
just
down the route.
We haven't figured it out yet.
Well, I figured it out. You're right. You're right. We can't explain everything naturalistically, but we just have to expand naturalism to include some of my favorites, like God and UFOs. And if we can do that, we can probably explain 99% of things.
This is just going to be a trip down History Channel in like 2 a.m., right?
I would like to tell you that for the Christmas times, I don't think it's in here, Katie got me a...
Can't we just go back to Christmas ghost stories?
I know, right? We'll do that next year. I'll tell you, Katie got me a day-by-day calendar that, like, you tear off the thing.
Yeah.
From the History Channel. Guess what every day is.
Oh, my God. It's something with aliens.
It is another paranormal or unexplained event in world history. Which I think is amazing.
That actually sounds amazing. That does sound very quite incredible.
And we're probably going to use it to get ideas for the show. But I just thought it was funny that the History Channel was the one putting this
off. That's what we should do for our Instagram.
That's true. Just every day, post one. And then at the end of the year, you can print off all of the pictures and make your own.
There
That's
you
pretty
go.
Good.
Just usurp History Channel altogether with it. It'll be fine. I'm sure of it.
Now,
just their content.
Whereas Jason and I and Richard Dawkins, we all agree that the sun did not fall out of the sky.
Right.
I disagree because I do think that something happened. I do think there's something that occurred here. And personally, I cannot come down on any side of it other than it being something unexplainable, supernatural, or paranormal. And if I was putting my money on it, I'd probably put the lion's share of my immense fortune that I'm going to win in about a week when they have the raffle, the $1 million raffle here in Idaho. It's your best chance at $1 million if you haven't got the... I mean, you can't buy a raffle ticket now because it's over in the past, but by the time you hear this, I will have $1 million. And I would put the majority of that $1 million on the possibility that it's the Catholic side of it. That the way we explained it last time is the way that it happened, and that is what's responsible
so
for
a true
all
miracle.
Of this. A true miracle. But I am a cowardly man, and
I
so...
I don't quite understand what's so miraculous about the sun dancing in the sky.
Is it something that would normally happen under the current laws of physics and science?
No.
Then it's a miracle, as we'll talk about next time. Because next week, we're going to talk about a history of Marian apparitions, and we're going to talk about how the Catholic Church validates miracles and what that even means. So come back next week for that. Thanks for the...
Of course.
For the plug there. I'm going to take this hat off. Does my hair look bad?
It's okay.
Fine.
At this point, it adds to the facade.
Is it a facade?
To the character.
There we go.
I was thinking we should do a costume change for next week anyway. You want to just switch t-shirts?
Yes, I do. I really do. But I can't. I have to go back on my diet today because I am too fat. I looked at myself this morning and I was like, oh man.
The holidays hit me pretty hard too.
It's been rough. So, because I like to hedge my bets, I would probably put the other little bit of money, let's say $100,000, that I don't bet on the Catholic side of things, I'd put it on the other most commonly used explanation for what really happened here, other than Jason's naturalistic theory.
Can't you just save some of it?
No. I've never been able to save money. I just can't. As soon as I have like $5 in my pocket, it's just gone.
Just like the reason why you're going to end up in your parents' basement, just like me.
That's true. Yeah, Jason's already there. I'm going to be there pretty soon, guys.
I've accepted my fate.
Pretty soon, Not Alone is going to be broadcasting from two different sets of parents' basements.
Oh, yeah.
And that's one heck of a technological achievement for 2020.
Uh-huh.
Now, Jason.
Samuel.
If I had to tell you to find another explanation for the miracle of the sun that did not include
drugs, okay,
or naturalistic phenomena, what would you say it probably was?
I can't say drugs, mass hallucination.
Yeah, no naturalistic phenomena.
Nothing natural.
Yeah.
You are outside the realm of my comprehension.
All right. Well, it was a gosh darn UFO. That's obviously what
it was. The sun was the UFO?
The sun was the UFO.
Just put it on a light show, like an EDM concert.
Yeah, yeah. I went and saw Trans-Siberian Orchestra this last time. That was a heck of a light show. It was probably even better than that, I would think. Probably because of the aspect of clear and present danger that you were about to be incinerated.
I mean, did you not hear the electric violin?
That's true. It is electrifying. Now, we've talked before about visionaries who believed that they were talking with UFOs, who were promoting some sort of Christian hegemony, some sort of Christian message. We talked about Orfeo Angelucci. We talked about, we talked about Adamski, George Adamski. We talked about these people who kind of spread what I like to call the UFO gospel. But this is interesting because the explanation for Fatima as a UFO event,
yeah,
is that it is the UFO gospel, but not that it's the UFO gospel, but that the Christian gospel itself is the UFO gospel.
Chariots of the Gods.
Sure, yeah, kind of. That's not really it at all.
No?
Actually, no.
I assume we're just going that far back.
That's fine. I appreciate your assumption. Now, it gets... Again, a big part of this is just reframing everything. When we frame this a certain way, as opposed to it being an angel and the Virgin Mary, it's kind of easy to see how this could be a UFO event as well. And if we start by looking at the Angel of Portugal, we have this idea of it being a transparent, translucent being.
Okay.
Who's right. More like just a being of pure energy, kind of more than anything else. It was transparent as crystal when the sun shines through it. To me, that sounds like a different kind of life entirely. It is, of course,
fair.
It is, of course, different from the biblical account of angels, which range from normal guys to six winged configurations of eternal amounts of eyes and earth shaking voices.
Well, how does it align to the idea that they're beings of light?
Yeah.
Like, is that...
That could definitely
same.
Be
it. Is this kind of a spawning of that?
It to me, it sounds like the kind of technology, the little bit of like invisibility technology we have that bends light
right.
around it, right?
Correct.
So I don't know, maybe. But this idea of like a transparent, well, now that's interesting, see, because in the book of either Exodus or Ezekiel, it talks about God, and God, at least his throne, if not him, his personage, is like, it's translated to be transparent like a turquoise stone.
Okay.
And so you have this kind of glass-like figure of a person that's an event. So I actually hadn't even thought
about that. A crystalline body.
Yeah, a crystalline body. So it could be. It could still be. We could still be biblical at this point.
So it's not like an unheard of connection piece is what
correct.
I'm getting at.
Okay. Correct. But the angel himself, while compelling, is not the main reason why I think that the UFO explanation is a good one. It's not even necessarily the miracle of the sun with it, the sun dancing and jumping that makes me think it's
I'm
a good explanation.
Run it back for a second.
Okay. Run it back.
Theoretically, if alien life does exist, which it probably does, it's more than likely not to have the same structure that we have.
True.
Which a crystalline form, I believe, is if... Oh, don't hate me if I'm wrong. I want to say it's... Is it silicon?
Sure. I don't know.
As a building block instead of using carbon. Potentially it can form like a crystalline organism.
That does sound like the correct answer based on the first two episodes of Star Trek The Next Generation.
Perfect. That's
where they come in contact.
Star Trek does
with
a lot
giant,
of good stuff as far as like yeah. actual science.
Encounter so, Far Point is what it's called.
And so that could be correct. Otherwise, it's somewhat in the realm of possibility. So if we were to say it's the extraterrestrial route, it's more plausible that than them looking just like us.
That's true. And of course, then you get into that question of like, what are angels but extraterrestrials anyway? Which we're going to cover all of that here. I promise, to Jason's dismay. Now, for me, even more so than the angel or the sun itself shaking around and being all crazy. One of the most compelling parts of this whole theory of the miracle as UFO event are the reports of the apparition itself. Mother Mary, who in the last episode, because we framed it a certain way, it's very obvious that that's who she was. However, I think I mentioned it last time. If not, I'm mentioning it now. There is a fantastic 580-page document that is just full of firsthand accounts of what the children saw, the children themselves speaking, other people who are there as well. And that's what we're going to really draw from this episode. So we'll make sure to put that in the show notes as well.
Did you actually read 580 pages?
No.
Oh, thank goodness.
That would have been unreal. Unreal.
I'd be like, oh, that's why you're crazy.
No, well, that there's other reasons for that. One interesting thing is that in at least one account by Jacinta and at least one account by Lucia, they both give a description of the Virgin that is a bit different from what we typically think of it as. What? So, yeah.
How dare they?
So, to begin with, the size of the apparition raises some questions, but not too concerning. The apparition itself is reported only being about 3.5 feet tall at first.
Okay.
That's not inconsistent with some other accounts of Marian apparitions, as we'll see next episode.
Do we know how far away it was?
I mean, no, actually, I don't. I have always assumed they'd be within about 10, 15 feet of it because they were standing right in front of the tree.
Yeah, because...
And she was either to the side or above.
Of the vision we've never actually covered before. I don't think we stated previously.
We didn't, but it was always kind of assumed and billed as just a normal-sized lady.
Right, because otherwise, if it's extraordinary one way or the other, it's usually spoken about more frequently.
Right. And what's interesting is that for the longest time... We have to remember, which I made a point to say last episode, I believe, is that the apparition did not introduce itself as the Virgin Mary. It wasn't until its sixth appearance that it even made that indication.
Right.
And so the young children were very careful not to call it that. Instead, they called it the Little Lady. In all of these accounts, in the reports, they just call it the Little Lady. The Little Lady did this, she did that. Okay. Whatever. So her size was of particular importance, especially in these earliest reports. And of course, we're talking 1917. The concept of aliens hadn't really entered the public consciousness that much.
Right. War of the Worlds was late 19th century, right? 1800s?
I think so.
Late 1800s? 1890s, so. Something like that?
Well, when was the wireless invented?
The wireless what?
The wireless radio.
Let's find out. We have the internet.
Just see when War of the Worlds was published. Because I thought, well, no, wasn't the War of the Worlds with Orson Welles? So it would have been in the mid-20th century. Well, the radio play was. Find out when this was.
1897
was when it was published. And then it would have been years later that they did the radio play itself. So... It had kind of come into the public consciousness, and we talked about this before in one of our bonus episodes.
Yeah,
I think.
it was much different style of alien.
Mm-hmm. But of course, little people are an almost universally acknowledged component of folklore, often portrayed as tricksters and stuff like that, which we'll be getting into here shortly. But there are three other areas of differences that I think are worth noting. The first is that the eyes of the lady were black. So
that's scary.
That's a little spooky. Now, here's the thing about it. A lot of people, that's kind of like a smoking gun to them. I don't think it should be. When you read the children's accounts, for instance, Lucia, when she's talking about Jacinta, she says that Jacinta's eyes are black. It could just mean that they are very dark, overwhelmingly dark, as opposed to a lighter colored eye. But both Jacinta and Lucia say that the apparition's eyes are black. So we don't know if this means
if it's a contextual thing.
Yeah.
Or if it's
like the cover of Communion.
Right.
Which is, I think, what most people think of as soon as they hear.
Yeah. And it's still tough to pull back what we interpret at this point in time versus at that point in time as well.
Yes.
So that's something to always take in consideration and everything with a grain of salt as far as descriptions of what things look like.
Yes. Now, the second thing that's a little more concrete is that she did hold a glowing orb in her hand.
Okay.
And this is what she used to facilitate the secrets in order to facilitate the children seeing themselves immersed in the life of God. And also, it was out of this orb that they saw a beam of light kind of shoot up and join with the sun, which then preceded the solar miracle. So that's interesting as well. The children, or later on, it was described simply as though there was a light in her hands, kind of a formless one. But the earliest accounts are a definite orb that she's holding. Finally, and this is almost the most significant of all of these, even though it sounds like the most commonplace, is that the being was said to be wearing a short skirt that was cut off at or above the knees.
Okay.
Now, we here at Not Alone Podcast are in no way going to try to tell people what they can and can't wear. That's simply not the business that we're in. But the business we are in is trying to find as much context for everything as possible.
Don't What's wear up? Plaid and stripes. Don't do it.
Do it.
Don't
do
it.
Do it.
Don't do it.
Do it. This skirt has been one of the most contentious articles of clothing in religious history, right behind the Shroud of Turin.
Maybe, was it a hot day?
It's not about that. I'm glad you asked, but it's not about that. See, this and keep in mind, the skirt is also paired with the idea that the apparition was allegedly described wearing hoop earrings. Now,
okay.
It's made to sound like giant hoops. It sounds like they were actually just like more like little tiny rings,
small rings
instead. But honestly, this is the most important variation. And the reason why is, and again, this all comes from the documents themselves. The reason why this is so important is that skirts that showed any amount of leg at all in 1917 were considered wildly inappropriate, especially in rural sheep herding countrysides in small towns of Portugal. Yep. I really can't explain how shocking it would have been to these children to be interacting with a being who was supposedly the Virgin Mary, who is supposedly perpetually a virgin, perpetually chaste, perpetually good and virtuous and lovely no matter what, and to see her wearing a short skirt. It is incompatible.
It'd be like seeing her in lingerie to us now.
Yes, I hate Basically. That. But yes, that is the right description. It's even been suggested by some Portuguese authors who looked at this that a skirt at or above the knee was not even what prostitutes at the time would have worn. It was too scandalous.
Too scandalous. Wow, so, too much attention.
Yes. Now, I will say there is a chance. Again, I put an all call on Twitter, said, hey, anybody who reads Portuguese, please help. Nobody helped. And that's fine. I understand. But I did have to auto-translate this from Google.
Okay.
It's entirely possible that this is incorrect. However, there are other Portuguese-speaking sources who have confirmed that that's in there. So I haven't seen it okay. 100% sure with my own eyes, but it's enough to believe it's there. So the hoop earrings as well would carry a social connotation that was similarly distasteful.
Interesting. Okay.
So in later accounts of this, the earrings are gone and the skirt is to the
normal
foot.
Length.
Yeah. Yeah. Floor length skirt, which of course would have been very much more in character with the Holy Mother.
Hypothetically, could it just be the way that the light was potentially shining from her made
and that's
it appear like she was wearing a short skirt?
And that's the thing. It's a luminous being.
Right, yeah.
Right? So it could be that they just, it kind of like disappeared, right, into nothingness. That could be what it is. There are other reports, though, that the, one of Jacinta's reports is that instead of wearing white, she was completely clad in like a gold suit. Sort of a thing.
Like a pantsuit?
Like a space suit.
Okay.
Okay.
So
keep that in mind.
Are we talking about time travel?
I don't know what we're talking about.
Are we talking about time traveling aliens that got their their suits incorrect, and they later had to alter it because they goofed up. Why wouldn't they just go back farther in time and fix it? I don't know. Anyway, time travel's weird.
So the question is not if they messed up, right? They showed up the first time. I mean, this is fair, though. They showed up the first time. They're like, oh, no. Oh, oop. Oh, we're not. Nope, this isn't good. And so the second through six times, they show up in the correct garb.
Proper, yeah.
That's possible. It is also used, well, I say possible, within the realm of imagination. It's
right,
possible.
Right. Hypothetically, for science, for saying science. This is what's happening.
It is also possible, and unfortunately often posited, that the Catholic Church is involved in a massive cover-up, as it always is, right? That's what people are always saying, whether it's Dan Brown and the Da Vinci Code or it's something else, is that they're covering something up, which is actually the entirety of our bonus episode this month is all about them covering up the third secret.
So are you telling me it's a potential that Mother Mary had a little bit of a wild streak?
That it's not necessarily
in the early 20th century?
No. That it's not Mary at all
who
is appearing here.
Okay,
no,
so
I don't.
Potentially a different angel or a different entity?
Different entity, yes, entirely. So that, to me, is very compelling. Maybe more compelling than it should be. And again, there's a few different things that could
be
going on.
Wait, are you
here.
Telling me that the Catholic Church is covering up an actual extraterrestrial visitation?
Well,
with,
that could
a miracle,
be the case.
Quote, unquote.
That could be the case. I don't know what I think. I'm just giving the options.
Perfect.
Here.
Okay.
Now, again, it's worth noting, the apparition did not refer to itself as Mary until the sixth time.
Right. Right now, she's just a little lady.
She is the little lady, is what the children called her. But the appearance is weird. And it's one weird part of all of this. And it is weird.
That's what you stick on, the appearance.
But there is a lot of other weird things going on.
What else is going on?
Again, last thing, she was supposedly wearing a kind of a jumpsuit sort of situation, a gold jumpsuit, according to Jacinta. At least that's, again, how it seems to be in the translation. And also a cape or a cloak. Maybe the cloak would make sense. The cloak would be
cloak
fitting.
Makes sense, yes.
The cape, not so much.
A little less so.
But they're easy to get confused.
Where do you land on the potential idea that the orb is actually the craft and then everything else is a projection?
Yeah, that could be it. That could really be it. We'll talk about that. Wait, the orb in her hand?
Yeah.
That could definitely be it. Or the orb is a method of communication by which she communicates with the craft, which was positioned thusly to be as though the sun. Look in the same spot and place that the sun would be at the same radiance until such a time as it was time for the miracle to happen.
Okay.
Yep. Now, that's weird. It does get weirder.
Perfect.
March 10th, 1917, 2 months before the first apparition, an advertisement appears in a newspaper. It's the advertisement simply has a number as its title. The number is 135917. Then there is a message that on that happy day, something very fortuitous, which would bring joy to the world and relieve the suffering of war, would occur. 135917 is, of course, the 13th of May, 1917, by the European dating convention. So, that's interesting. 2 months before, something's going to happen on this day. It's going to be related to the end of the war. And of course, that is what the Virgin talks about. She's there to end the war. They're praying for the end of the war. Now, where did this advertisement come from, you ask? Occultists. Why wouldn't it have come from occultists?
Makes sense to me.
Hey, everybody. It is Jobless Sam here, here for our mid-show break. This one's going to be a pretty quick one. We actually, as you may know, this is the point where we go through and we typically thank those who have pledged their support to the program on Patreon recently or who have written us an iTunes review. Unfortunately, none of these things have happened in the last week. Neither a new pledge. Now, we did have two upgraded pledges, which I would like to thank. But we haven't had any new pledges, and we have had no new reviews pop up on the iTunes store either. So if you'd like to help out with the show, either financially or emotionally slash kind of like helping the ratings algorithm and all of that, you can take a look at patreon.com/notalonepodcast there. And we would like to thank Luke Reiser and Vera Fernandez, both for upgrading their patronage. Luke joined the Bring Your Own Book Club level, which means that he gets to participate in the book club every month, so long as he brings his own book. It's just a little bit of a cheaper option, especially for people who have other ways of procuring books or have a certain source they like it through. And Vera, by accessing our $3 level, means that they have access to the marathon editions, meaning the entire series is set out at once without ads, without beginnings and endings, just as one beautiful 4.5-5 hour long chunk of audio at the front of the episode. So you can explore more about those benefits and all the other ones again at patreon.com/notalonepodcast. And please do feel free, please write us a review on iTunes. It helps so much. Not only does it just motivate us to keep the show going, it also, I think, helps with the algorithms and the ratings and all of that. So if you are an individual who has created something or who works for something or whatever that you think Not Alone has something in common with, maybe you've written a book, a spooky book, maybe you work on a web series, a podcast of your own, something like that, and you're interested in getting the word out about that, feel free to shoot us an email. We are accepting we're basically looking for people to advertise on the show. And if you're interested in that, we'd really appreciate it. It'll help pay the bills. But if not, that's okay, guys. You know we love you no matter what you do. So we're going to go ahead and play our podcast promotional bumper for this episode. And this week's comes from one of my absolute favorite shows. They always have been and always will be. That is Oh No Lit Class with Megan and RJ. They are two wonderful individuals who ruin required reading for all of us. So take a listen and then enjoy the rest of the show. You may have noticed really quick, we are back on our Thursday release schedule. That's been my plan since the start of the year, was to put it out on New Year's Day and then get back to the Thursdays. We just did last week's on a Wednesday as well. So, but from here on out, we're looking at Thursday morning, early in the morning. So it's there when you wake up. That's the goal. So, all right. Thanks, guys. Bye-bye. Enjoy Megan and RJ.
I'm Megan.
I'm RJ.
And we host Oh No Lit Class, a comedy literature podcast that tells you all the strange and sexy facts you never knew about the books you had to read in school.
Every episode is a fun, foul-mouthed spark notes for your ears, filled with author bios, plot summaries, bad impressions, and Megan singing.
It's mostly you that sings.
No, I sing well. She sings poorly.
That's not true. So come listen to us ruin classic literature one book at a time at onolitclass.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
Oh No Lit Class. We're for kids.
No, we're not.
This strange little message was the result of a spiritualist group which had been meeting in the country capital of Lisbon. Sorry, that makes it sound like they were like in the Capitol building. They were in the city of Lisbon, which is the country's capital. I don't know where they were meeting within Lisbon. One of the members of the group was a young man named Carlos Calderon. He claimed that he had received this message by way of automatic writing, which you may remember. I'm almost certain we've talked about it before. Essentially, you've got a sheet of paper, you've got a pen, you put the pen in your hand as one would when they write, you put your hand on the paper, and then it just does its own thing.
You basically work as a medium.
Exactly. A medium.
Which,
for the spirits,
I don't believe is smiled upon by the church.
I'm glad you mentioned that. We'll get there. But okay. You're completely and totally correct. Absolutely right.
Spiritualism must have been a really weird thing in Portugal and Spain at this point in time.
Mm-hmm.
Huh. Well, more homework to do one day.
Yes, one day. So, it is like when you hold a pen and inspiration just does the rest, not unlike composing a great song or a breakup letter after being unhappy for a number of years.
Okay, Taylor Swift.
Interestingly enough, this letter was even more extra than it first appears. This message was, in fact, channeled and written in mirror writing.
So that means he wrote it backwards, or?
Yes, exactly. He wrote from right to, no, how do you do it? He wrote it like Leonardo da Vinci. So he wrote from left to right, but if you take what's on the right and you flip it around over to the left so that it's all just backwards. Exactly. Just like you said a moment ago.
Okay.
All right. This is basically the Leonardo da Vinci of ghosts, is this man, or what was channeled through this man. The message says, quote, "It is not thy place to be judges. He who is to judge thee would not favor thy prudence. Have faith and be patient. It is not our custom to predict the future. The arcanines of the future, or the arcanes of the future, are impenetrable, although on occasion God does allow the corner of the veil cloaking it to be slightly displaced. Have confidence in our prophecy. The day 13th of May shall be a day of great joy for all the good spirits of the world. Have faith and be good. Ego sum charitas. Thou shall always have thy friends at thy side, who will guide thee and help thee on thy work. Ego sum charitas. The brilliant light of the morning star shall light thy way." Ego sum charitas means I am charity. So, now we have an interesting little bit right there at the end of the letter.
The morning star?
The morning star. I am the evening and the morning star. Do you remember that?
No.
The Prince of Egypt?
But
that's what Ramses says?
Okay. It's been a long time since I've watched
it. Too long, it would seem.
Yeah.
I love The Prince of Egypt. It's like one of my favorite
movies. It was
good.
I know it is.
It's very good.
But also reminds me of that hit Netflix show now, Lucifer.
Lucifer! Oh my gosh, you did it. You transitioned.
You're welcome.
You segued. So we do. We have a reference to the morning star, which in Portuguese is Stella Matutina. For a lot of people, this rings a very specific alarm bell, the alarm bell of the devil himself. How do they utilize that frequently in
it's
that
his
show?
Last name.
Oh, okay. That makes sense.
Yeah.
Okay. That's... We're going to talk about why I hate that right now, actually.
Okay.
Why it's his... I don't mind that they're calling him that. I just hate that it's his last name.
Ah, okay.
It'd be essentially as though your name was Rex King, but that's fine. So...
Some Nam bread, right?
Yes.
Some chai tea?
Some salsa sauce. So, the reason that A, I hate that, and B, the word morning star rings that alarm bell.
I mean, what else would he make his last name? To be honest, if he's going to have it on a California driver's license as Lucifer, Lucifer what? You're not Cher. I'm sorry.
That's fair. That's fair. That's
one
fair.
Name doesn't work.
It could be like Lucy, and then his last name could be Fur. Yeah. Yeah, that'd be bad. That'd be bad.
Yeah.
We will come up with an alternative name of the devil by the end of this series. Or of last name of the devil. We'll figure it out. Now, the reason that this word is bound to the devil himself is an interesting translation choice by the authors of the King James Version of the Bible. Now, in Isaiah 14:12, the Latin Vulgate translation of the Bible, which was completed around 405 AD by St. Jerome, translates the Hebrew word Hillel ben Shahar as the Latin word Lucifer. Now, Hillel is a hapax legomenon, which means, or maybe it's a hapax legomenon, it means that it only occurs once in the body of work that it resides in. Thus, it can be kind of tricky to translate. But the root of the word...
So it's just an anomaly.
Yeah, yeah, it's an anomaly. But there's a lot of these in ancient writings. It's not
weird. Okay.
Yeah, it's not necessarily like the end of the world. A lot of times you simply go and you compare it with other documents written in the same language. There are very, very, very few ones that are actually the only time that that word occurs in any written record.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
Yeah. Now,
was this such case or?
No, I don't believe so. The root of the word is HLL. This is found a variety of times. Basically, the Hebrew lemma, the root, just like our roots here, are going to just be able to be changed a little bit to create a new word. So the root of HLL, it means to shine or to flash. Thus, in more modern versions, Isaiah 14:12, which is a prophecy against the king of Babylon, is translated, quote, "How you are fallen from heaven, O day star, son of dawn. How you are cut down to the ground, you who laid the nations low," unquote. However, due to the translation philosophy of the King James Version, it is there for the first time in English translated thusly, quote, "How thou art fallen from heaven, O Lucifer, son of the morning. How art thou cut down to the ground, which didst weaken the nations," unquote. So here, the name Lucifer in the KJV is seen as a proper name as opposed to a noun. Now, the more modern translations translate it varyingly, maybe as day star, son of the dawn, as we heard, or the shining one, or by the sense of it being the morning star. Now, Lucifer in Latin refers to a few different things, but the first one and the main one is the planet Venus, the last star that disappears in the morning, heralding the dawn. Because of this, the morning star has, for better or worse, been associated with the satanic influence which caused the king of Babylon to rise in rebellion of God, basically as shorthand for the devil himself who rose in rebellion of God. Thus, at a surface reading, this message seems to come from the devil, or at least some sort of influence that could be considered demonic. That's why I said calling him Lucifer Morningstar is like calling him Rex King. They both mean the exact same thing. Yes. But that's not the end of the story. See, in 2 Peter 1:19, I don't know why I said 9. In 2 Peter 1:19, the same word that is used in the Greek translation of the Old Testament, which is the Septuagint, the same word is used here. That word is phosphorus. And instead of describing the devil or the king of Babylon, so again, Septuagint, Greek translation of the Old Testament, the word used phosphorus to describe the king of Babylon and the devil.
Wait, I thought we were talking about aliens.
Yeah, we are. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Now, in the Greek New Testament, the word phosphorus comes up, 2 Peter 1:19, and it's used for Jesus Christ himself. Therefore, Jesus Christ is the morning star. However, amongst a slew of whole other people who came to be identified with the same celestial body, by the time of 1917, one final figure was also identified with the morning star, which was Mary herself. Thus, one of the foundational claims of people who are making this sort of argument that this is actually not the Virgin Mary, but instead it's like a demonic apparition that's like leading people astray. Well, it came from the Morning Star, where the Morning Star could be anybody, including the Virgin Mary herself.
Is that, again, just like taking this instance out of context where...
Absolutely.
Yeah. Like, yes. you again, look at information through your own version of what you expected
your own lens. Yeah. Exactly. And the lens that we're looking through is that good messages do not come channeled by occultists and spiritualists. So like that method is incompatible with like what the church teaches and all of that, but the message itself actually is not. So I just thought that was interesting.
Okay.
All right. So,
but yeah, our miracle of the sun didn't stop the war.
Well,
it didn't heal soldiers.
It didn't cause anything with the war, didn't it?
No.
Within a year, the war was over. The Great War had ended.
It wasn't fought in Portugal.
while the Portuguese sent their children to war.
In North Africa?
Sure.
That's one front.
Sure.
It wasn't even close to Germany.
Well, that's fine. They're still fighting in the war.
All right.
And that's the point. That's the point. Is from the very first occurrence, the very first day, Mary or the apparition says, you're praying to bring about the end of the war. So even if it didn't necessarily end at the time of the miracle of the sun, that is the established reason for this miracle, at least one of the established reasons. And thus it is also the established reason for this message given to the occultists by the morning star. So they are linked in that way.
And the morning star from the day itself, either Lucifer, Jesus, or Mary.
Or like Aphrodite as well, obviously.
Venus herself.
Venus, yeah. Anybody, really. We could make a lot of good arguments here. So I don't know what's going on.
Probably Charlemagne.
It's probably big old Charles. That's what I like to call him in this house. Jason can tell you that weird coincidences happen all the time.
Right? I mean, yeah, I can make a claim that something miraculous is going to happen somewhere in the world.
And then something will happen on some
which
day.
In enough context or through enough lenses does seem miraculous.
Mm-hmm. The fact
I can
that...
tell you someone's going to die in a car crash today. Yeah, because the odds are in favor for it.
Well, like... and you got to remember on Jason's point in favor, the war was the talk of the world.
Yeah.
It was the only thing going on.
It was the biggest thing.
It was, of course, there were... This was not the only time that someone prophesied that like the war was going
to end.
Something was going to happen. Yeah. Right. So now I will say,
especially because this was again later into the war,
yeah,
where I'm sure people were tired, exhausted from it.
Yes.
To where looking down for an out and having some sort of belief that it is coming to an end was probably favorable.
Yeah. Could be. Now, here I come. Okay. Now, so yeah, Jason can tell you there's coincidence all the time. And I agree with him. I do. I believe in, I don't believe in coincidence, but I believe in what appears as coincidence. So, however.
I mean, if he had said on the hills of Portugal, next to a tree, some sort of apparition was going to appear.
That'd be a little bit harder to,
like,
to fake.
If you're actually, yeah, if you're giving me specific details, I'm going to take your prophecy, quote unquote, a lot more serious.
Yes, that's true.
And then it's a lot harder to, or a lot easier to prove that it's incorrect.
Yes, that's true. However,
the devil's in the details.
Literally. As I think I just showed. Or the devil's not in the details
maybe
at all.
Not.
And it's the Virgin or Jesus. Who knows?
It's up for you to decide.
Something's in the details and we have to find it. Now, two things have a relatively high chance of simply being coincidental. Co-incidental to each other. Three of them have a substantially less chance.
All right, what's the third? Hit me.
On May 11th, 2 days before the apparition, a letter was mailed from the town of Porto, 200 miles from Lisbon, and 120 from Fatima. I don't know why I said Fatima. Fatima. It was sent to some of the major newspapers of the country and was published 2 days later on the 13th of May. The letter was from one Antonio, either a single person or possibly a pseudonym for an entire spiritualist collective, and it reads as follows, quote, Dear editors, it was imparted by the spirits to various spiritualist groups that on the 13th of the current month something will occur regarding the war that will impress all people. I have the honor to sign my name to this, a spiritualist and dedicated propagandist of the truth, Antonio, unquote. So, we have two supposedly, reportedly independent accounts. At the very least, they were postmarked from completely different cities. And other than the mention of something related to the war happening on May 13th, they share basically nothing. It's important to note, this one made the front page in some smaller areas. The other one was again buried deep within the classified advertisements, and even then, very vague.
So you don't see any likelihood of the spiritualist community at large
it's possible.
Talking about this?
It's definitely possible.
Because, I mean, Portugal is also a maritime state for the most part.
Sure.
As far as traveling via boat 200 miles, that's not that big of a deal.
It happens.
Yeah.
That's fair. And it's possible.
I could definitely see just word of mouth through a society.
Yeah.
Catching wind and then causing, because we don't have a lot of details.
No, we don't.
This one versus the first one.
No, we don't. And he did say it has been imparted to various spiritualist societies. Right. So
he's
Antonio,
a propagandist.
Yes.
So he wants to spread more.
He propagates.
Correct.
So that's up for you, the listener slash potential viewer.
Yeah, the unfortunate thing is that we just don't have a way to go back and verify any sources.
Correct. Now, Jason had mentioned, rightfully so, that if you say something is going to happen on a day, you can find something that's happened on that day.
Yeah,
pretty much.
It's like reading your horoscope.
Yeah, exactly.
If you're reading something in anticipation for something to happen, you will find something throughout your day that fits that.
Here's something that's very, very, very interesting. In my opinion, again, could be coincidence. That's fine. The week before and after the 13th boast 34 different military events. We're talking battles. We're talking destroyers. Well, not destroyers. But we're talking things destroyed, things taken, things captured, things lost. Every single day, 2 to 3 things were happening. On the 13th, there is literally nothing. Nothing of interest worldwide.
What day was the 13th? Was that a weekday?
No, I think it was a weekend.
It was a weekend?
I think it was like a Saturday.
Okay.
But I don't know for sure. I could be wrong. I mean, nothing else is happening.
Nothing
and
occurred.
Not even just war related. Like, the only notable things that happened that day are Real Madrid defeated the Arenas Club de Getxo in the Copa del Rey final, and there was an act in Switzerland regarding stamp taxes. There's no other events related to the war that occurred on the 13th of May, or even like events worldwide that were of any note, which to me is just, it's just very, very, very fascinating, because yeah. I totally get that idea that, like, oh, everybody's saying something's going to happen. Somebody, for whatever reason, randomly picks, or maybe they have a good reason numerologically or whatever, they pick the 13th of May. Another people, they either come up with it themselves or probably talk to each other, whatever. They say the 13th of May, and then the 13th of May, nothing happens other than this one thing.
Right.
It's just wild to me.
I mean, I'm still having trouble trying to connect the miracle to the war in general. It's not like what we already brought
up
before. It's not like a Joan of Arc thing where inspired by God
right. You're having a hard time seeing like the cause
to,
and the effect.
Yeah. To become a military leader or something great happening on the battlefield.
Sure. But the miracle itself and the apparition in general was specifically from the very first of it stated to be related to the war. So they're in on it. The children are in on it.
Knew it.
Now,
can't trust children.
To me, this is a compelling and interesting case for something beyond just pious devotion. Not necessarily breaking into fakery and hoaxes taking place. Not that the church created an event to establish itself or
what
anything like that.
What if the occultists did?
How'd they do it?
I have no idea.
That's fair.
A series of lights and lenses? I mean, you can put an image onto a piece of glass fairly easily. I mean,
sure.
There's stained glass. That's an easy way to get the right amount of light and reflection going.
But then how do
you propagate
only
some sort of image?
3 out of 70,000 people see the Virgin. Well, and that's not fair, because at first it's just the three of them. So
give
even
the
next
children
time,
drugs.
Give the children drug the sheep herders. It's fair. It's fair. You're not wrong. It's possible, to say the least.
They're your agents in the chaos.
But beyond that, the apparitions themselves.
As I start other conspiracies. Who am I? What have I become? Look what you did to me.
The apparitions themselves carry very strange, maybe alien overtones of the 6 months leading up. So,
I mean, we've got dark eyes.
Mm-hmm.
Crystalline-esque bodies.
Mm-hmm.
In small stature. We don't have notoriously large heads. We don't have gray skin. We don't have what we think of as the commonplace alien nowadays.
True. We do have other things, though, that are very good. Now, before I get into that, I just want to say I don't think that the church, I kind of mentioned it,
orchestrated anything.
No. And the thing is, the church nowhere in the histories of this event is there any mention of the occultists. That has to be found through different sources. The church itself never publishes anything, rightfully so, because again, there's a 3,000-year-old ban on consulting with mediums. It is not something that you just get to do, even if you've got good reasons.
If it was good enough for the Greeks, it's good enough for me.
There you go. But for me,
King Leonidas did it, I'll do it.
For me, I think that the idea of them taking a spiritualist phenomena and trying to turn it into a Catholic one doesn't make a lot of sense. So I just want to say that before we get into this. Now, strangely, very strangely, right? The first sighting, which happened in May, the 13th, there was only the kids. But word got out as soon as it did. And the next time they were followed by 50 different individuals in June. We almost immediately get some quite striking ufological parallels. Very strangely, a report from June, again, this is all from the first-person sources compiled in the documentation. A report from June comes from a non-believer who went to assure himself that nothing was really going on. He states that the sky, at the point when the apparition was supposed to have been flying away, went very, very blurry, which I don't even know what that means. The sky was blurry. It got very, very dark. The temperature shifted dramatically colder. And then there were deep underground rumblings.
So if we're thinking about what would make the sky blurry,
okay,
the first thing I think of is heat radiation.
Okay.
Like asphalt on a hot day.
Okay, that makes sense.
Where it makes the sky right above it really blurry. So, and that's also commonplace for any kind of jet propulsion system.
Yeah.
The earth rumbling, that's a tougher one.
Yeah.
And
there were no jet propulsion systems.
Right, no. But, I mean,
But it's there.
The jet
craft
wasn't
happens.
Built until, what, the 50s? No,
I have
40s?
No
late,
idea.
Late 40s. The Germans came up with the first jet engine on a fighter. So
ingenious people, studious, hardworking.
Anyway, the earth rumbling, the only thing I can think of, if we are talking like a jet engine, does make a little bit of sense, because if you've ever been to like a fighter show,
okay,
like maybe something with the vibration of the sound made him think otherwise, like it was actually the earth growling. But that's the closest thing that I can think of that we've experienced that can possibly relate to it.
Yeah.
But again, that's just me looking through my own lens.
Yeah, that's true.
Of an account.
I'm glad you bring that up.
Trying to make sense of it.
We'll talk about that. The lenses. Now, another witness in June claimed to have heard some sort of rumbling sound, deep rumbling and humming, coming from within the oak tree. When Lucy told them that there was a lady, or that the lady was leaving up into the sky, this individual heard a sound like the whistle of a rocket and saw a cloud of smoke rise up out of the home oak tree into the sky and disappear. According to this witness, who attended a number of the apparitions, if not all of them after this first one, every time that Lucy would announce to the people that the apparition was arriving, as she did, she would often say, here she comes, and then when the apparition was ending, she would say, there she goes, the arrival was always accompanied by a buzzing sound that came in with it. This same witness was also present at the miracle of the sun and claimed to see not a round object like the sun, but an egg-shaped object, radiant and splendorous, that dove out of the sky to within a few feet of the ground.
Well, the egg's also been a very common icon in religious contexts. Well,
It is.
As far as an icon for rebirth, I mean, we've talked about that multiple times.
Yeah. And some of the craziest and wildest UFO accounts come from egg-shaped crafts, like Lonnie Zamora.
Yeah.
Now, another bizarre report is that during the September apparition, those gathered claimed to see a few different extreme signs. One was a globe of light, and a 16-foot-high pillar of cloud that manifested next to the home oak. Others claimed that they saw a number of objects like small snowflakes falling from the skies. Others called them white petals, or even described them as falling stars. And when they reached up to grab hold of them, the objects disappeared before they touched the hands of the observers.
Was someone just shooting off fireworks?
I guess it could be. It's possible. And you get this idea, too, that with that, I mean, you do get the idea that as things gain a notoriety, people do hoax things at specific times, at specific events. When you say something is going to happen at a time, I mean, you even just think about like ghost hunting shows. When ghost hunting shows come to town, people find a way to get into the hotels and the prisons and whatever.
To do something.
To do something about it. And that's possible, for sure. Right.
I think it's interesting how I've seen photos of the day of the miracle and photos of the sun taken at that point in time where no weird shenanigans are happening. But if all this other stuff is happening as well throughout the other 5 days leading up to this, and the crowd is growing quite exponentially.
Substantially.
Yeah. How is no one else bringing cameras to take photos of these either? Have we found any?
Have we seen
any images of no other meetings? Nothing? Just the day of the miracle?
I think so. But I didn't look, I will say.
Yeah.
So that'd be a good thing to follow up on.
Oh, okay.
You don't have to. You don't have to do it right now. Okay, go ahead. Now, it's true that while signs and wonders accompanied pretty much every apparition, which in my opinion helps that crowd to grow, like we said, it started out 50, it ended at 70,000, with 30,000 appearing the month before the miracle. I haven't been able to find accounts of anyone else seeing any sort of being other than one, which we'll talk about here in just a moment, very briefly. There were sounds and lights and rumblings that were heard and seen and felt, but only one other person besides Lucy, Jacinta, and Francisco saw any sort of a personage. This was a child of one of the witnesses named Carolina, who claimed to see a blonde figure hovering above the home oak tree at some point, but there's really nothing else about this. There's nothing else that we know about Carolina. Now, I'm not going to lie, this to me sounds better and better for a UFO event by the minute. It's also important to take into account that the miracle itself and some of the descriptions that are spot on with UFO reports, things like the sun moving, throwing off all sorts of colors of the rainbow, bathing those in attendance and luminescence, is a very, very close encounter of the third kind. However, there are even more specific things which predate the study of UFOs by decades that share key components. One such thing from a technical sense is the type of motion that's described. In one of the reports we heard last episode, the witness stated that the sun seemed to, quote, flicker in one direction and then another. It seemed to detach itself from its place in the sky and fall upon us, unquote. Others describe the sun's descent as serpentine, which we all know from Archer means running in a zigzag fashion. Babu, serpentine. But this seems to match up with a particularly well-attested dimension of close encounters of the third, or really of any kind. But, well, no, the third kind, which is called the falling leaf. There are literally dozens, if not hundreds, of UFO encounters that describe the craft as moving as though it was a leaf falling through the wind in a zigzag pattern. It's also referred to as pendulum motion. Even the famous Kenneth Arnold sighting over Mount Rainier in Washington, which you'll remember from our series on Project Blue Book, kicked off the UFO craze in the U.S., described the crafts like saucers not due to their shape, but to the way they skipped up and down across the air. Now, go ahead.
But flying saucers don't typically perform for large crowds like this.
Well, not typically.
I mean, usually they're caught by Air Force pilots and things like that, or essentially a very, very small group of people, one or two actual observers.
Yeah.
This is, would you say, just a complete outlier in that regard?
It depends. It depends on our theology.
Okay. Nothing is as it seems.
Nothing is as it seems. We'll talk about that.
Just healings, don't unzip your face quite yet.
Healings and heat, which are also associated with the miracle of the sun, are attributed to close encounters as well. There are multiple accounts of people being sick, being hurt,
right,
come in contact with a UFO and they're healed. Now, such a take on Fatma... Why can I not say it today? Such a take on Fatma... Fatima? Fatima. Why can't I say it? Such a take on Fatima has been popular, at least for a number of years, beginning with Jacques Vallée's Dimensions, a casebook of alien contact, which was published in 1988. It is definitely worth our consideration. From the initial strange appearance, wherein the apparition is small, dressed, right, potentially dressed entirely in gold with a short skirt and maybe even white boots, holding a ball of light in her hand, staring at the children with black eyes, to descriptions of buzzing, humming, whirring, smoke, lights, and movement, all of which I've cited, come directly from Vatican-approved sources and most from first-hand accounts. Yet, even if we do decide that Fatima... Oh my God.
You added in a
Fatma,
letter or two.
Fatima? Fatima? Even if we do describe that Fatima is a close encounter, there are still more questions to raise. One of the key aspects of the event of October 13th, 1917, the miracle of the sun, that is brought up time and time again by skeptics is that there is absolutely no scientific data, nothing that was seen in laboratories, nothing that was measurable from scientific observatories or anything like that. I posit that this is because the event did not happen, but rather the event at Fatima could have been a prime example of what J. Allen Hynek would have referred to as a mind and matter machine.
Okay, what is a mind and matter machine?
As we have covered before, near the end of Papa's life, Papa being J. Allen Hynek, he did not regard UFOs as a base material machine that was built by beings from another world, the extraterrestrial hypothesis, as it's been called. He instead began to believe in something more, that these were psychic manifestations of beings living in other dimensions. I know it sounds crazy, because it is, but it could also be true. Instead of physically coming into our reality, a higher dimensional being may have been able to place its limitless fingers directly on the brains of those ambling through this three-dimensional world, so to speak. They could make us see things that weren't there, allowing them to appear to just the right people and no one else. Thus, even if the witness 25 miles away, who had forgotten about the whole affair until he saw some spectacular aerial phenomena, he may be able to see something that millions between himself and the event did not witness, either because of something that was literally planted in his mind, a phrase, an idea, a word, or because of some direct manifestation through space and time into his brain itself. Elsewise.
So, now,
okay.
Hold on.
Okay. Woo!
Then why not just tell us the truth and enslave us like the pathetic animals we are?
They don't want to enslave us. None of
because we're useless to them.
No, because they love us.
But why? Because,
shut up.
Because
we're
adorable?
There.
Is that what it
know.
Is? Look at the humans. Look at them fight.
This is the key, Jason, this is the key question and problem of especially Abrahamic religions, but I would say most religions in general, which is if there is something that is so high and so advanced and so amazing and so unlike us, why would it possibly care about us at all other than it loves us? Why do these things interact with us other than they care for us? They love us. They want us to be okay. And so, this is not necessarily what I believe, but it okay. is a good explanation. Well, that other stuff I said was fine. But so, it is that here we have 70,000 people who are moved to believe in something higher, moved to believe in something beyond themselves that wants peace, that wants them to work for the good of the world, that wants them to work for disarmament and armistice, because they want us to be around, because they don't want us killing each other.
But the
that is a religious message, whether it's coming from God or whether it's coming from a 10th dimensional being.
But then why didn't everyone experience that same message?
That's a good question.
Instead of just the three children, two of which dying relatively soon after the fact.
Yeah. It's the same answer either way.
Okay.
Their ways, our ways. I know.
Well, it didn't work.
Well.
Clearly.
Well.
We had another world war after that, which yeah. was worse.
Yeah.
And many wars
which
following.
They predicted it would.
Okay. Anyway, so what's next on our little adventure here? So it's aliens. Like
it
always.
Could be.
It's always.
It could be. But I think it would be. So that's the alien perspective, by
right,
the way.
Right, right.
That's where we are. That is, again, we do have the idea that it's something.
So wait, was it a physical object being present, or was it purely just
brain touching?
Going into our minds, which is an intrusion there.
Thank you very much.
Whatever dimensional being you are, if you love me so much, stop poking my brain.
But what if the only way to save you is to poke in your brain, like a surgeon?
There's usually consent.
I guess that's true. Anyway, we can talk about those later. Yeah, so that's the UFO hypothesis. It's okay. Either a physical UFO or it is a mind and matter machine reaching forth through the dimensions. But there is one last angle. We're going to make it pretty quick because we're coming up on time here. We're actually over time here.
Yeah, we are.
I knew the idea of hour-long episodes would never work. The last thing I want to look at is something that if we did not examine, we would be dishonoring my UFO uncle, Jacques Vallée, in an unconscionable way. Our listeners will remember that one of the reasons I have such an affinity for Vallée is because he is just crazy enough to suggest that the same phenomena we see manifesting with UFOs is the same phenomena responsible for stories of ghosts, witches, the Wild Hunt, and so much more. The surface claim this makes is that we now understand these archaic explanations are simply more primitive ways of understanding our extraterrestrial visitors, but this is not correct. It is not that we were foolish and superstitious before, and science has provided us with an answer to this question of intrusions from higher beings now. Rather, it is that when we give it 500 more years, we will see that our ideas of UFOs are as outdated and nonsensical as the idea of a woman flying around on a broom with a lantern on the back of us, or on the back of it. As a quick aside, I've always loved the idea of it being us, humans, the entire time, stretching backwards to influence us interstellar style. Therefore, I simply have to point out otherworldly, beautiful, spectral women have been popular in Portugal and parts of Spain for quite some time. They are called the Mora Encantada, or the Enchanted Mora. When we eventually, at some point, cover fairies, we can go more in depth with them then. But the format for the Mora is rather familiar. Beautiful women, bound by a magical spell. If you break the spell, they reward you with great wealth. Yet they are more varied than traditional fairies.
Very djinn with that.
Yes, yes. Now, the Mora may sing like a siren. She may have long, beautiful hair, usually gold, but sometimes black or red. These women are enchanted by the Moros, which were beings who used to inhabit the area but have been driven underground, and they enchanted these women to guard their wealth. The women live in a kind of daze, unable to feel deeply or focus intently. While there are a number of variations of the Mora, such as the Mora Serpente, who is a shapeshifter who turns into a serpent, or the Mora Lavadeira, who does laundry, there is one...
Hey, man. You still got to do daily chores.
Yeah, yeah. Even if you're an enchanted, bespelled woman. There is a certain kind of Mora Encantata, which is particularly interesting to the Fatima case. I don't know why I keep calling it Fatima. This is the Princess Mora, or the Princessa Mora. The Princessa Mora is often portrayed as a Muslim princess who falls in love and is redeemed by a Christian knight during the period of reconquest. Sound familiar? Could it be that the woman that was seen by the children was no other than the Moorish princess that the area is named for, Fatima herself?
So are we talking again about an apparition, a time jump?
We're talking about, I don't know.
If she's, okay, we don't know what we're talking about.
Those are the crazy explanations. Again, I love them. I don't know if I believe them, but I love them.
Okay.
Jason, you got anything to add?
My mind is just scrambled eggs right now.
That's okay, because next week we're going to get back into nice... rational. We're just gonna have a short chat. Well, I say short.
Well, we grab from everywhere.
Yes,
it's all over the place. It's a thought soup.
That's true.
Yeah,
that's true.
So
it's after doing this like 109 times, it just kind of all melds together.
Yeah,
time and space fly away, and all there is here and now, and you, and them.
Goodbye. Okay, so farewell.
Do you have anything else you want to talk about in this episode?
No, this is terrifying.
Okay, good.
I'm set.
All right, well, you know where to find us. Facebook, Instagram, Twitter. Not Instagram. Just Google us. Make sure you do go check out the Patreon. New structures and levels we have. Again, we've added a few different areas. For instance, this episode, we talked about Jacques Vallée. We are going to be starting our first Not Alone book club soon. Maybe have already started it by the time this comes out. And that first book that we're going to talk about is Jacques Vallée's Passport to Magonia, which is all about that we talked about, that these like fairies are UFOs, but the UFOs aren't UFOs. There's something even greater that we can't comprehend, that we just keep coming up with different names for. Perfect. We'll probably do some John Keel as well. So you can find that and all of the other tiers online at patreon.com/notalonepodcast. Who did it last time?
You did.
Yeah, it was bad. Okay, so it's your
terrifying
turn.
Yeah. Remember, whether you're scribbling down a message from the other side, or you're witnessing a miracle play out, you are not alone.